Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, May 10th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things going this week?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business has the number one online MBA program, according to U.S. News and World Report. Why? Because Tepper MBAs are taught to thrive where data analytics, technology, and business intersect. At Tepper, students learn the latest analytic and management skills to not only lead but succeed in an increasingly complex business world. You'll learn from Carnegie Mellon's internationally renowned faculty in a vigorous curriculum and enjoy globally networked career and alumni support. Earn your MBA in one of three formats built to fit your lifestyle. There's never been a better time to earn your MBA. For more information, go to cmu.edu/Tepper. That's T-E-P-P-E-R. So are you, I guess the UK's kind of back to normal pretty much? I mean, it's spring, you're out and about, like, are things pretty good now? I mean, I see the number of cases coming out of the UK is really astonishingly low. So maybe you're at the end of you're in the good zone here.
Yeah, we're still in phase one of opening up. So we've got phase two and three to go. But yeah, we're very fortunate. The vaccine program has been a tremendous success. So yeah, and it's springtime, the sun's shining. Although I'm told we're going to get a bit of a storm tomorrow, but I'll just take what we've got for today.
Good, yeah. Things are pretty good in Paris. I think we're going to start reopening soon a little bit. So I still am waiting for the numbers to come down to UK levels, but hopefully that'll happen with time here.
Yeah, take your time opening up. That's all I can say. I mean, I think what we've learned with this virus is we've opened places up too quickly and we've paid a huge penalty for it. So. I'm not trying to provide policy advice to different countries and anything silly like that. But if we have to lock down for an extra couple of weeks just to get the numbers down a bit further, I'm very happy about that.
Yeah. Well, if I see Macron in the streets here in Paris, I'll let him know that you recommend a slow reopening. all right. So what's going on in the MBA admissions world? Because the wires have been actually quite active over the past week. What have you been seeing?
Yeah. I mean, we're in the midst of decision weeks for round three, as we talked about in the podcast a little bit last week. What we've seen more so this week are decisions coming out. And what this also means is waitlist decisions are being finalized for groups of students, not all students. There'll be several students that'll be maintained on summer waitlists and so forth. But typically the round three decisions does also include a number of waitlist waitlist decisions. So the activity is pretty good. I see some people getting successful decisions off the waitlist. At Tuck, for example, is one of the schools that's been quite busy this last week. We'll see more of that over the next couple of weeks, I think, Graham.
Yeah, and I just want to say, for those of you who got in off the wait list, congratulations. I know it's kind of a long ride usually, and it's pretty painful. I also really feel for those who've been released from wait lists, because a lot of schools are doing their, for lack of a better word, like spring cleaning, kind of just going, as you said, to the summer wait list, which is usually a smaller list. And so I feel for those folks who've been hanging on for several months. In many cases, they're like round one applicants. But hopefully they have other options and will land somewhere this fall. It's always tough with the wait list. So we feel for those folks out there.
Yeah. I'm going to throw a couple of things out there that might be a little edgy, as it were. But I see this pattern season in, season out. So I'm going to throw it out there. On the one hand, I mean, if you're an overrepresented candidate and placed on the wait list in round one, I'm sorry, it ultimately doesn't typically end well. And I've seen that again this season, people now being let go off of the waitlist, having been in on round one. And a lot of time they are from those overrepresented groups. And the second thing that I've seen in the last week is at least one candidate posting that they got admitted off the waitlist and got scholarship money. And again, what this signals to me is this candidate, and I don't have proof of this, but this candidate probably through the waitlist process really reaffirmed to the school that they absolutely want to be there and maybe didn't do as good a job of stating that case in their initial application. Because otherwise, why would you give someone scholarship money that you'd placed on the waitlist? There's no other reason in my book, Graham.
Yeah, I think the only thing that comes to my mind is if they're losing people who they had allocated scholarship dollars to, and then suddenly they get that money back, if you will. Maybe they need to spread it around on the waitlist candidates. But I tend to agree.
But that what you're saying suggests that they're giving scholarship money to all their admitted candidates, because clearly the people you put on the waitlist should be the next tier down of your overall candidate profile, right?
So right.
Again, the only reason in my book is the candidate didn't do a good enough job in the first instance, yeah, saying or making the case that this particular school is a great fit for them. Anyway,
yeah, it's possible.
It's just, you know, stuff that I observe season in, season out that it bears really thinking about as a candidate. It's so important in your application, in your initial application, to make the case for why the school is a great fit for your goals and your plans.
Yeah, fair point. So speaking of all these, you know, folks getting in off wait lists and just getting accepted overall in these late rounds, you got to take our survey. If you have an acceptance letter in hand and are going to business school this fall, please check out the survey. We're actually giving out Amazon gift cards. There's like $25 gift cards to a whole number of folks who take the survey. I think it's over 20 or something. So please take the survey. I'll put the link in the podcast episode description, but it's just bit.ly/MBA admit survey. With the word MBA in all caps. So please take the survey. Over on the website, Alex, we've been continuing to roll out the Real Humans. And I will say, you know, last year we did like tech jobs, banking, consulting, and this year we've been doing other domains like healthcare, which could not be more timely. So we've got a bunch of folks. We've got someone who works at Novartis, who is an LBS grad. We did a profile of a woman working at Amgen, who's a Wharton grad. There's we've also done some consumer like products companies. So we have a guy that works at Gatorade, or Pepsi, I guess, is the parent company. And he's actually a former NHL player, Kellogg grad. And so he's like in charge of marketing for Gatorade or something. And then we had someone from Procter & Gamble as a Cornell grad. So you can check those out on the site. I know from talking with applicants that these like real stories of like, you know, just folks who've been to these programs, have jobs, are out there working are really valuable in terms of just getting a feel for what a school can do for you and how you can make use of the MBA. So check those out if you're interested. We also, as you know, Alex, we had that event last week with a bunch of top schools, kind of an admissions primer for people who are going to be applying in the coming cycle. And it was a blast. I mean, we had admissions directors from Wharton, Columbia, Michigan, Ross, UT Austin, and Berkeley, and so many people attended. So I had a lot of fun, and we're actually going to do it again this Wednesday, again at noon Eastern. You have to sign up, and you can do so on the Clear Admit website. And this week we've got Duke, Cornell, Dartmouth, UNC, and Yale joining us. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And Alex, you're going to join in, aren't you?
I think so. Yeah. No, I mean, congratulations for last week's event. I've seen some really good feedback. So no, absolutely fantastic. And I'll just say a quick shout out to the alums that get profiled in these real human stories. It's absolutely fantastic that they do that. And I think, it, like you say, it's really good to be able to read sort of outcome stories like this, so you can really see yourself in the shoes of these folks that have gone through the entire journey. So that's very good.
Yeah. Keep reading those. Also, Alex, we're going to get on Clubhouse today at noon Eastern to do our usual kind of 1 hour of chit-chat with candidates and provide real-time advice. That's been a lot of fun. I keep seeing familiar faces showing up week in and week out. So if you're not on Clubhouse, get on and come and join us for some conversation.
You throw me a bit when you said today, because at noon Eastern today, I'm actually going to be hopefully in the pub drinking beer, because it'll be 5 o'clock my time and it's Friday as we're doing this recording. So, right. So yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Today, as in when people can be listening, fantastic.
Yeah, we always record in advance. Yes,
and we really enjoy it, right? I mean,
yeah.
Let's be honest, the Clubhouse meetings are very small, so we can call them boutique meetings and quite intimate. But I really enjoy the format, quite frankly, Graham. And we get folks up on the podium, or whatever you call it, the stage, and we chat with them directly about their application profile and their concerns and questions. Yeah, I'm having a blast. It'd be great if we had a little bit of a bigger audience, but I'm anticipating as the season sort of kicks off for next season a little bit more, we should see that. But no, it's brilliant. Yeah, really enjoy it.
Yeah, lots of fun. So we hadn't had any reviews this week of the podcast, and you know, I'm just going to put out the plea to please, if you like the podcast, rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And if you can't do that, at least just tell somebody you know about the podcast to spread the word. We really enjoy doing it, and it's great to reach so many applicants. We did, Alex, get some listener mail. As our listeners know, you can email us at info@clearadmit.com. Just use the subject line wiretaps, and we will look for the email. And so, Alex, I'm going to put you on the spot because we got a good question over email from a guy that is actually going to be starting a master's, like a specialized master's in business, but is thinking about getting an MBA down the road, like after he gets the master's, goes and works for a while. You know, this is like a college student, I'm assuming. So he wrote and said, Graham and Alex, I want to start off by thanking both of you for the work you do and the information you provide on the podcast on a weekly basis. I will be matriculating in August at Vanderbilt's Owen School to complete a specialized master's in marketing. However, I have aspirations to return and complete an MBA in 4 to 5 years. So his question is, does it matter when I choose to take the GRE or GMAT? He wants to retake, I guess, to get a higher score. Will schools look at a score that is, say, 3 years old in a negative manner? And similarly, I plan to complete HBS Core and MBA Math, and I'm curious if it matters when I take these courses. Can I have the courses completed 2 to 3 years prior to applying, or should they be completed closer to the application process? Thanks for your time, and again, keep up the great work. The podcast is the highlight of my Monday. So, Alex, what do you make of that question? Because it's a good one.
Well, I'm glad they said the highlight of their Monday. If they started saying the highlight of their life, everything else they said would lose complete credibility.
Yeah, I don't know if the podcast is the best thing of their Monday. I'm a little worried too, right? No, but in all seriousness, this is a really interesting question, right? Like, does it matter how recent your test scores are or your alternate transcript work is?
Yeah, I won't go into the other sort of looming question is the thought of doing a master's and then doing an MBA a little bit later, because you know that sort of creates a whole other set of conversation in terms of, you know, truly. Well, let me address it real quick. Make sure that master's in marketing that you're doing right now really does set you up for whatever this career is that you. Mm-hmm. Pathway you're going forward to then develop to do the MBA. If you're just doing it simply to get another sort of a master's degree complementing your undergrad before you start your career, I don't know that that's the best use of someone's time if they can start that career now. Now, I can see the advantage of a master's in marketing if it has a strong analytics focus. Mm-hmm. That's one area where I can really see it's advantageous to do. But if it doesn't have that real strong analytics focus, then I would question that decision. Anyway, that wasn't the question being asked. The question is, the GRE or GMAT, do schools look at old scores? Typically, these scores last 5 years. I think the GRE, I assume, Graham, the GRE is the same.
They're both 5 years. GMAT.
So 5 years. And I would say if you're hitting the average of the schools that you're targeting, of the admitted candidates, it doesn't matter how old the score is, right? If your score is not hitting those averages, it's slightly below, it's certainly within range, but slightly below, I would, as an ADCOM, say, you know what, you had plenty of time to think about retaking it, you perhaps should have done. So it depends on the score is the answer to the question. If it's a great score, 5 years is perfectly fine. The other question is this sort of MBA math and HBS call. And I'll let you tackle this one, Graham, a little bit more concisely. I would speculate probably you want to do that closer to the time you're beginning the MBA to show that you're really ramping up. Because you've got to think that there are two reasons to take HBS core and MBA math. It's not just to assure ADCOM that you have the chops to be successful academically, but it's also to show that you're getting prepared for this first semester curriculum.
Right.
So if you do that 4 or 5 years ago, probably doesn't have that same second value. Anyway, I'll turn that back to you, Graham.
Yeah, I think both of these questions, they raised other questions for me, you know, like, how did this candidate do as an undergraduate and what sort of coursework did they pursue? Because Yeah, I just want to make sure, like, do they need to take both of these, kind of courses, and what is the target? You know, I don't know how they performed on the GRE or GMAT when they applied to the specialized masters, but clearly they want to raise it. So I guess it's probably below average at top MBA programs. But I tend to agree with you. You know, the GRE or GMAT is good for 5 years. I don't really care when the candidate does it as long as it's not expired, which is the 5-year mark. So that's not going to be a factor. And I would just recommend that he take it, you know, whenever he feels ready and, you know, when he knows he can put in the time and be assured of kind of boosting the score. Because I don't want him to take it, you know, 3, 4, 5 times. Like, ideally, he just takes it once more, hits it out of the park, and that's it. I'm going to agree with you on the transcript stuff. Like, if he's going to do HBS Core or MBA Math or both, like, I would do that closer for the exact reason you stipulated. So I think that's the way to go here. And I just will add, if I agree, if the specialized master's in marketing sets him up for a great job right out of that degree, and he can do that for a few years and then make the argument as to why he then needs the MBA, all should be fine. But I mean, yeah, it makes sense to think carefully about that, because on some levels, you're going to have to make the case to the admissions team as to like why you need another master's degree in the business domain, even though I recognize there's a difference between, you know, specialized master's in marketing versus a straight up MBA. But that's something that should be in the back of his mind. Like, I got to make the case as to why I need more management education.
Yeah, perfect.
So let's move on, because I know we have 3 great wiretaps entries to cover this week. So let's get into it and talk about wiretaps candidate number 1. So this candidate is looking to start business school in 2025. I think that's a first for us on the show. And she is looking at Carnegie Mellon, Cornell, Washington Foster, and Wharton. Pre-MBA career has been mostly in marketing and family business, has also done some tutoring, and post-MBA is hoping to work in tech or entrepreneurship, ideally with a stint at a big tech company like Apple, HP, or Microsoft. Her GPA is a 3.21. She has, 3 years of work experience, although I don't know if that's current, because I think she's just finished undergrad. So maybe this is what she's estimating that she will have at the time of application. This candidate is in California, would love to stay in California after business school. And she mentions in the notes that she just finished undergrad at a top 10 public university and has been doing an internship at a startup, has also worked in the family business as in a kind of business development role since her freshman year. And she's going to apply, as we noted, in the fall of 24 to start in 25. And she's wondering about her GPA, which she knows is on the weak side. And she hasn't yet taken the GMAT, but she got a 700 on a practice test and is hoping to, you know, boost from there and get a really top score. She's got a bunch of extracurriculars, which maybe I'll let you delve into. But Alex, what do you make of this? I mean, we don't see that many candidates who are, you know, targeting things this far out, but it's great. I mean, it obviously she got a lot of time to work on her candidacy.
Yeah, as you said, I'm surprised we have a pick list that goes far enough into the future that they can select 2025. So that's quite good on our part. You say I can talk a little bit about their extracurriculars. I don't even know what graffiti-inspired spray paint is, or spray painting, or whatever. I mean,
there's street art, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's some interesting stuff here. And I think, and I'm really sort of actually excited to see someone posting on ApplyWire that's thinking this far ahead. Because I think we could just give some general advice rather than get into the detail, because the detail hasn't really been fully developed yet, obviously, with this candidate. So what do you need to do if you're planning to do an MBA at a top school in 3 or 4 years' time? You need to have impact at work. I mean, obviously, when you first start your job, you've got to learn on the job, but really start thinking about how can you begin to take on challenging projects. How can you begin to stand out and really be that sort of go-to person at your level, and so on and so forth? So how can you sort of cultivate a persona of impact at work relative to your peers? And then, you know, in the outside of work life, another opportunity to sort of have impact as well as, so you know, show a little bit of additional diversity and so on and so forth. And I think, you know, this person has a lot of interesting stuff that they can use for that endeavor too. And then, and you know, whether that's music industry, I mean, there's lots of interesting stuff here, Graham. And you know, she's taken or practiced the GMAT. She said she's got about 700 on the practice test. So it's like, well, if you can knock the GMAT out of the ballpark, that's, you know, 720, something like that. That's going to go a long way to help with the GPA issue, which 3.2 is not disastrous, but clearly there were issues that sort of compromised the GPA, and they can be addressed in the optional essays. To complement that, also maybe taking, as we talked about before we came on air, Graham, MBA Math or HBS Core, to sort of show that and again, close to the time of the applications we discussed with the previous candidate we were discussing, and really show that they're ready to hit the ground running. Graham, I don't see any reason why this person can't make deliberate steps to become a top candidate for top business schools.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Again, you know, a 3.21, it's not the end of the world at all. It's only, you know, I mean, a lot of these top schools have averages around 3.5, 3.6, somewhere in there. So she's not, this isn't like a 2.6 or something. And I feel comfortable that with a lot of work on the GMAT, she'll get a high score. And she had a good explanation. She actually dealt with some, you know, health problems and even some, I think, sexual harassment and stuff in her first year or two at university. So I feel like there's a very logical story and an upward trend in the GPA. So I'm not worried about it. Get a good score on the GMAT and all should be well. I did think that the one thing that struck me was that she moved from a STEM major to a non-STEM, and that's what prompted me to say, okay, that's fine, but maybe closer to the time of application, taking HBS Core or one of these, you know, online things to get, to show that the chops are there for kind of business subject areas would be smart. But yeah, I feel like there's a lot to like here, and as you said, you know, it's an unfinished candidacy still. So she's going to start to work, and there's probably lots of great things ahead. And yeah, just looking for opportunities to have impact both at work and outside of work should set her up well. So I appreciate her posting. Again, we don't see many folks this far out, but it's really interesting. And I think anyone who's planning this far ahead has a lot of opportunity to, you know, put things in, you know, kind of a really good stead with the admissions committee and yeah, get a great candidacy together. So very cool stuff.
Just one other quick thing, Graham. Again, we're sort of advising maybe to do one of these sort of prep courses. She does teach or tutors college-level calculus to folks. She's probably pretty smart, quite honestly.
Yeah, and it could be that, look, if the GMAT ends up being a home run and the quant score on the GMAT is great, maybe she doesn't need to do another class if she can point to this tutoring work and stuff, because Calc is a, you know, kind of one of these foundational classes. So yeah, lots to like.
Calc's impossible. Yeah. Oh, if you're on tutoring Calc, you're smart.
It's funny because I, just a personal anecdote, I did really well in calculus like in high school, took the AP, and then I got to college and I took calculus in college and it was like a nightmare. I mean, once you get into these, you know, high levels, it's not so easy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right, well, let's move on. We've got another ApplyWire candidate. So this is Wiretap's candidate number 2. So this person is looking at 11 business schools. We've got Berkeley, Carnegie Mellon, Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, Duke, LBS, Kellogg, NYU, UCLA, and USC. And they want to start business school in the fall of 22. This person's working as a developer, I believe that's like a software developer, in Credit Suisse. So kind of more of a back office job. They're located in India. And post-MBA, they'd love to get into consulting or tech. And the GMAT score is a 740. They have a 7.6 GPA, which, as our listeners may or may not know, in India, things are out of 10, or really usually on a percentage scale of like 100, so 76%, which there's no grade inflation. And so anything like above 60 is usually pretty darn good there. They have a 4 years of work experience to date. And they indicate that you know, they're working at Credit Suisse. They've had really good projects and accolades along the way. They've really also contributed to their firm's people initiatives, as they put it, and they've been a mentor with an education nonprofit. So they're wondering, they're kind of still figuring out their post-MBA goals, but they're thinking strategy or product management for a consumer-facing tech company. So what do you make of this? Because we've got an overrepresented candidate, Alex, yeah. But you know, and you know, being Indian, working in kind of a tech role and stuff. But what do you make of this candidacy?
Yeah, so, you know, we would call this person's role sort of back office work, which doesn't sound particularly flattering, quite honestly. But, you know, as a tech developer, I mean, frankly, that's what you're doing. You're developing product that someone's sort of asking you to develop. You've got to be very smart to be able to develop this stuff. I'm not dismissing that at all. But to the extent that they've had input in determining what's being developed and how it's being developed, that would be interesting to know, and how they sort of contributed more on the innovation side, possibly, rather than just being, you know, rather than just coding to certain requirements that are provided to them. They've done well at it, no doubt about that, and got an accolade, so that's good. The other good thing is they've gotten involved a little bit more broadly in their firm in terms of what you labelled and what they labelled people initiatives. So that can be helpful too. They also mentor with an education nonprofit. That's super important in this case. So really, what are they doing outside of work to really show that sort of leadership and contribution and so on and so forth? That's going to be very important in this case. I would really want them to think long and hard about these post-MBA goals and make sure that they're well developed. We see a really good reason for what they want to do in the future, rather than simply, I want to get out of back office stuff, I want to get into the front office, and I see the MBA as a way to do that. Yeah. Have a sort of more sort of articulated plan going forward, something about which they're passionate. That's going to be really important. This candidate has to apply in the first round to really maximize their chances, because again, overrepresented candidate, tech, I mean, unfortunately fits all the boxes. The 740 GMAT's going to help, but sadly in their bucket, that's almost like an average score, which right. is ridiculous yeah. when it's a 740 GMAT. So bear all that in mind, hit that round one, have those goals really well developed, use whatever that they can to show that they're more than just a really good code dude.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think one thing, just a general kind of admissions lesson, which we always, I mean, that's why we do wiretaps, is to try to use real candidates to deliver kind of very good lessons that are applicable to many candidates. And I think in this case, the one I'm thinking of is, you know, when you're working as a developer and you, I don't even know if this person stated it, but they probably have an engineering undergraduate in India.
Yeah.
You know, you have this risk, you're in the back office, you're doing stuff behind the scenes, and MBA programs want people who are kind of out in front and, you know, client facing, or they want to at least see that potential in a candidate. And so I would just say this candidate's going to need to work to show that they're more than just kind of a coder, as you say, and that they have those kind of people skills, or, you know, at least a promise in that domain that helps them stand out. So I think if they apply early, GMAT score solid, I suspect that the GPA is fine. I did ask them on ApplyWire, I asked them to provide some more detail about, like, did they go to one of the IITs, which in India is the kind of most prestigious group of engineering schools, because that would provide color in terms of like, oh, wow, this is a good score from a good school. But yeah, they're just going to need to apply early, and they're going to need to make sure that they can showcase sort of leadership potential and management aptitude, despite being more of a kind of engineer at this stage in their career. And it seems like there's potential for that here. So I think they have a chance. They just got to apply early, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's absolute potential for that because of some of these additional things that they're doing. But, you know, we not, might as well be frank and upfront. You've got to apply in the first round. You really need to show that you have passion and interest, you know, going forward, and you've got to develop. All this stuff's going to be super important in this case.
Yeah, and before we move on, I did want to mention that they have 11 schools on the target list. I assume that's just, you know, we always ask people when they post on ApplyWire to kind of be broad, and people usually are at this stage. But I presume that list is going to narrow down to five or six schools. And the only thing I would encourage this candidate to do is keep the kind of range that they have in the list. You know, right now they kind of run the gamut of the top 20. Yeah. I would encourage them to not only apply to like top five schools or something as they narrow down the list. I would keep that sort of range of difficulty on the admissions side. But yeah, lots to like here. And I think if they execute, they should have some chances here in the first round.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so let's move on. We have one more candidate to tackle this week, and this is Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a decision wire post that we received from a candidate who cannot decide where to go. This candidate applied to Berkeley, to Stanford, to UCLA, and to UT Austin McCombs. They're starting school this fall, and they would love to work in tech. They listed Apple, Facebook, Google, HP, IBM, Microsoft, and Twitter as targets. GMAT score was a 740 and GPA a 3.5. They currently live in Austin, Texas, and they were admitted to only two schools. They were admitted to UCLA with a $100,000 scholarship and to UT Austin with a $30,000 scholarship. And they mention in the notes that they're still trying to decide. They grew up in Southern California. They went to UCLA for undergrad, but they've been living in Austin for the last 5 years, and they love both cities. They're thinking tech, product management, and you know they're kind of thinking about like which school might have a more hands-on career services, and they're also interested in like a social life outside of class. So they asked for advice. Alex, what do you make of this? And there was a number of our community members who chimed in too, but what do you make of this case?
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting case, and one of the reasons why I picked it, we often see this sort of debate between Anderson and McCombs, almost like the debate between Duke and Ross. There's quite a lot of overlap in terms of interest in these schools. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of a geographic thing. I mean, obviously, there's quite a large distance between Texas and California. But nevertheless, we tend to see folks that sort of have that interest in sort of the Texas and California landscape. There's some overlap. And in this candidate's own personal experience, I think they're either from LA and living in Texas or from Texas and living in LA. Like, they know both geographies, they know them both well, and they're torn. On the surface, I would argue that Anderson's in a tier above McCombs, but it's close. McCombs is probably the top of its tier and Anderson's at the lower end of its tier. So they are very close, but it's interesting that this candidate has more money at Anderson in terms of scholarship than at McCombs. So maybe there's a potential for negotiation there at McCombs to say, look, if they really ultimately want to go to McCombs, they might have some wriggle room to increase that scholarship. They have good numbers, so maybe McCombs would be interested in that. I think, frankly, it all boils down to, in the long run, would you rather be in Texas or California with your tech product management role? If it's going to be in California, then Anderson's your best shot, and especially if it's going to be in Northern California rather than LA. I mean, Anderson probably gives you a better leg up there. If it's going to be Texas more broadly, then McCombs is the best bet. That's how I'd sum it up, Graham. And obviously, the candidates that sort of shared insights also went very granular in terms of the different opportunities in the different schools. And that's important too. I'm not dismissing that, Graham.
Yeah, that was cool to see. You know, some of the people chimed in and got very specific about, you know, curricular offerings at the two schools. The thing that for me that's tough on this, I mean, I think it's a little bit of a tough call. I mean, on the one hand, as you say, 100K at UCLA, it's higher ranked, but, you know, just go there, right? But then we get into the classic case of, you know, the double dip. And I'm not referring to George Costanza on Seinfeld dipping his chip twice into the bowl at the party and getting called on it. But this is, you know, when you go somewhere for undergrad, do you want to go back for the MBA? And is there a negative to that because you're not adding a new kind of network by virtue of getting a, you know, going to a different school? And so that, I understand that. I mean, that is a real thing to consider. At the same time, someone else pointed out that, look, yeah, he's getting 100K at UCLA, but the cost of living is pretty different in Los Angeles. And as you said, maybe they can negotiate to get a little more from UT Austin. And so maybe the money's not so starkly different as it looks right now on paper.
Right.
So, yeah, this is tricky. I do tend to agree with you, though, that if they know that they're going to end up in California or would like to, UCLA's got to have the leg up here. Yeah. And as you correctly point out, you know, even in Northern California, despite UCLA's location in Los Angeles, they have to have the stronger network. And, you know, in some cases, I mean, there were a lot of people at Wharton when I went there who were UPenn undergrads, and I don't think they're any worse for the wear, for having double dipped, if you will. So I don't know. I tend to think that UCLA makes sense here. A lot of those tech companies on their list are, at least for the time being, based in California. I know some are moving, as you said. What did you say that, you know, Elon Musk threw his toys out of the pram and ran off to Texas? Yeah.
I don't think that's absolutely the case. I might have misspoke because I know he threatened to.
Right. Yeah, I do think
they're still producing a few cars in California, I do know that they're opening a plant in Texas. So.
I think, in fairness, I think Apple has some presence in Austin, in addition to obviously their big presence in California. So, I mean, these are both great schools.
I mean, Texas is a great place for tech.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Increasingly.
Silicon Valley is the top place. I'm sorry to speak over you a bit there, Graham, but Texas is clearly making great strides for tech. So, I mean, if ultimately they choose McCombs, it's a great choice.
Yeah, I love both programs. And I think they're, you know, and the only other thing that I'm just not even going to get into because I don't know enough about it would be the social life. I mean, I know both LA and Austin are pretty great towns and there's a lot going on. Obviously, pre-pandemic, you know, Austin's really known for South by Southwest and it's a social town, right? I mean, it's a young town, it's a college town, right? Obviously, LA is a much larger city. There's probably a lot more on offer just by virtue of it being the second largest metropolitan area in the United States. But yeah, that's a tougher call. Someone pointed out that UCLA has a slightly larger program, more people to hang out with maybe. But again, I feel like that's sort of a secondary consideration. And I would encourage this candidate to think more about like, where do I want to be living 20 years from now? And if they're like, hey, I love Austin, I'd love to be in Texas. Someone really was adept at pointing out that, you know, the job that you might have post McCombs could be like in Dallas. Or Houston?
Yeah.
And is that okay with you? Or are you thinking, no, I'd rather have like San Fran and LA be my options? You know, so just thinking through that makes a lot of sense, you know, thinking the long term. But this is a great dilemma to have. And, you know, congratulations to this candidate for getting two offers with scholarship dollars. That's not a, doesn't happen every day. So very cool.
No, brilliant. Yeah.
So that's the end of the wiretaps portion, and that brings us to the end of the podcast. Alex, I really appreciate you picking out such great candidates to talk about. Again, we try to pick folks who, you know, we can kind of use the lessons in their candidacies to help everyone listening navigate this process. So thanks for doing that. We'll be back in 1 week's time with another episode of Wiretaps. And Alex, in the meantime, have a great week.
Very good. Best of luck, everyone. Stay safe. Thanks, Graham.